this kind of resilience and capability to survive transformations. It comes from respect between people. It comes from trust. It comes from enthusiasm and motivation and humor.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the NLN podcast. The NLN is the Nordic Leadership Network. We're a team of seven coaches, facilitators, speakers, and leaders. We help develop the leaders of today and tomorrow. We challenge teams to achieve high performance. We help companies to implement strategy and get stuff done so they can flourish and grow.
So, good morning. Welcome to podcast number 8. I'm David Goddard, president of the Nordic Leadership Network, and together with my colleagues Nick Vertigans and Stefano Mosconi, we're going to be discussing today with Tanneli Tikka. Welcome, Tanneli.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
No problem at all. And Tanneli, I've just been thinking a little bit how to introduce you, and there's a lot of things that we could say, but maybe what you're working on at the moment is partner with 52nd and with Epistemic, the investment funds. And then also that you are a seasoned executive, entrepreneur, investor, and board member with 20 years plus of experience. I notice that you have received various awards during your career: Young Board Member of the Year, ICT Opinion Leader of the Year, and also Scrooge McDuck of Finland. Of course, of all of those things, we want to hear about the Scrooge McDuck of Finland award.
Well, yeah, that's
about that.
That was a lot of fun. The Donald Duck magazine here in Finland, they wanted to select real-life people to represent Donald Duck, Scrooge, and then also, what's the unusually lucky character called again? The cousin of Donald, who's super lucky. And then, or also Gyro Gear Loose, this inventor guy. Anyways, they selected four characters, and they wanted to find a real life match for each one. So the alpine skiing champion, Kalle Palander, he was selected as Donald Duck. And then I was selected as Scrooge. And with that selection, they thought that, okay, everyone knows Scrooge as a crumbly old multi-jillionaire. But he was also young once, and when he was young, he was an entrepreneur, an adventurer, and an archaeologist, and doing all of these amazing things throughout his life and career. And they wanted to find a young person to represent Scrooge, especially this entrepreneurial sort of pioneering spirit. And that's why they ended up picking me as the prime nominee for that. It was super fun to do.
It sounds like Scrooge has had a bad press over the years. So if we think about that, the early years, maybe there's the fit there with that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, maybe I'm heading towards grumpy old age as well, that it happens to us all.
Okay, but Danny, great to have us with you today. We'd like to ask you first of all about perspective on the current crisis. So we've been talking with different guests in different parts of the world. Recently, we've been to Abu Dhabi, and our last episode we went to East Africa, and we heard something about something from the Horn of Africa about resilience. Abdi Jama mentioned that patience, persistence, and realism are some of the characteristics that he feels that will help Somalis endure and bounce back. How do you see things in Finland? You've worked in many countries, and you have a very wide network internationally. What are you seeing around the world, but also particularly in Finland, the characteristics that you think will help Finns to bounce back and endure the current crisis?
Yeah, I think we have some characteristics and experience from the past that will help us. One of the curious things about Finnish business life and society is that it's fairly relaxed in terms of formal hierarchy, and people get a lot of autonomy, and they get to do a lot of things, but still sort of the very major sort of national level decisions whether it be with government or companies or some other organizations, they tend to be very concentrated still in Finland. So it's kind of a top-down hierarchy of a few people when it comes to the super massive things. And Finns have a curious characteristic there that when there is an alignment, what to do in a crisis, for example, and the people in power decide, then usually everyone takes the decision to heart and they act and execute on it really efficiently and fast, that they don't stand there second guessing or complaining or trying to fight the decisions, that they usually take it and execute on it. And this is frustrating if you have a majority that's sort of not yet come to the right conclusion and the decisions are still being formed. Then you are sort of lagging in decision making, and then there's a risk that things get prolonged and time goes to waste. But once there is sort of an alignment, there's enough of a shared view that this is what we must do and the decision gets made, then Finns, I think, are very good at executing it.
So I think it was Francis Fukuyama that described Finland as a high trust culture. And I hear from your answer there that there's a lot of trust in the decision makers and the authorities, the politicians and scientists in Finland. And that's certainly very helpful. Stefano, what about you? What do you see from, also you have a bicultural perspective on these things?
Yeah, I think that this that Tani said is quite accurate. I can relate to the opposite end of the spectrum, where in Italy, for instance, if a decision is made, then you are not very sure if the majority will actually go with the same decision. So in a way, I really appreciate this characteristic of Finns. On the other hand, as Tani said, there might be some risks if that decision is not made, and in a way, everybody is waiting for someone to tell what is the official line. So I think there are both sides of the coin in this case. But as long as the decisions that are made fast and are the kind of backed by data and facts, I think in this kind of crisis, that's definitely a characteristic that helps.
Okay, thank you. And Nick, what about you? What have you been hearing? How does this build on the conversation that we've been having already around the cross-cultural perspectives?
Thanks, David. Very interesting. So I'm hearing top-down decision-making, alignment, and following the rules from Danieli. And I'm just interested to know how much following of the rules does Danieli do?
Following the rules?
Yeah.
I usually don't find it helpful if I don't agree with the rules. And somehow for me, the world is full of rules that are hindering, restricting, and detrimental. And they might be rules that are created for another purpose and another time, and ill-suited for innovation and spearheading forward with something new. And especially at those times, I tend to not follow the rules, but I still do follow something like lean startup practices and proven things that work in sort of a different dynamic setting, because I think that you have to pick up the kind of tools from the toolbox that are suitable to the task. And there's way too much ill-suited, conservative, old-fashioned tools in this world that don't apply to something new. And that's my main problem with following the rules.
Yeah, I thought that might be an interesting question to put to you. I know that before we hit record today, we were talking about your transformational learning program, and particularly how to handle in a crisis. So how to help startups, for example, manage that crisis situation. What's your approach to that? I'd be really interested to hear, how do you help people and startups and companies to handle themselves in a crisis situation, maybe like now?
Yeah, it's really something that gets built more during when the times are calm. That when the crisis hits, there's usually not enough time to build up everything that needs to be there in order for teams to perform at peak performance levels. But transformational leadership is one of these branches of leadership sciences that's been going around for it started sometime after the Second World War, and there have been these famous academics, James McGregor Burns, Bernhard Bass, Bruce Avolio, and many other ones who've spent decades publishing and researching this stuff. And originally, when they were coming out of the Second World War, they started to interview organizations that had done spectacularly well during wartime, and also organizations that had sort of imploded and had not done well at all during the war. And they ended up doing these kind of structured interviews all together in the span of decades, all together almost 500,000 of them. So like thousands and thousands of interviews. Mm-hmm. And what they discovered in the interviews is that these organizations that did very well in stressful times during the war, they shared many of the similar characteristics. They essentially did the same things. And then they distilled these things that the organizations were doing. They distilled them to a couple of theses. And they declared that it seems that this kind of resilience and capability to survive transformations and to lead transformations, it comes from respect between people, it comes from trust, it comes from enthusiasm and motivation and humor and these kind of positive things and positive outlook towards one another. And then it also comes from learning, shared learning, collegial learning, learning together. And it comes from the absence of negative control and from the absence of negative passivity. So these are the things that get practiced in good organizations that want to be resilient and want to be high in their capabilities of transforming and surviving something. That you build up these things during when times are peaceful and when tough times hit, whether or not it's a startup or some other organization, then you'll be able to draw on those resilient reserves and sort of hold on to that potential and use it. But it's next to impossible to build this all up in a day. When the crisis happens, you can start working on it, but it's going to be a long journey.
Yeah, indeed. So it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I guess you have to lay the foundations for such kind of concepts as respect, trust, enthusiasm, humor, and learning, which you mentioned. So I guess this takes time. Really interesting. David Stefano, what have you just heard from Donnelly?
Lots of interesting stuff. So I hear that Donnelly is already thinking about the future, and I think that the transformational leadership approach is very interesting way of dealing with crisis. I also hear, thinking about your background and experience, Donnelly, that, for example, 52nd is the first venture builder in the Nordics, and you have a lot of experience of going first and being first. There's something that we've been asking all of our guests, which is about habits and new things that are coming from this situation, and maybe if we could take a little glimpse into the future, what would you see that this virus has already changed quite a few things in behavior in human beings? How do you think that this will change in the future? So what are if you had to pick three things, what do you think will stay with us after COVID-19?
Oh, there's going to be so many things. That sort of three really big things is going to be a shift in education, educational technology, and how education gets remotely conducted instead of the usual premier on-campus experience of old-fashioned education. The thing with education is that it's really not changed that much, that even when they started with universities hundreds of years ago,
it was still the same kind of concept as it has been almost up until today. And that's certainly now finally obsolete for good. And there's going to be a lot more interesting times ahead globally for education, and some new big companies emerging as well who will use technology to take that to the next level. And it's the same with medicine, with telemedicine, and how doctors keep on touch with their patients. So many countries, they run medical systems and healthcare systems that are also these kind of on-premise experiences only for the customers. But now we are seeing, because of the pandemic, that many countries are rolling out telemedicine in an accelerated schedule. That, for example, France is famous for having a very good healthcare system. They have this family doctor system where you have your own doctor of the family, and almost every doctor is a private practice, and you get to choose which one you go to. And France, for example, now has telemedicine software and services available for free for any French doctor to use to be in touch with their patients. And they announced that it's free now during the pandemic. So something like that is going to spread. It's going to become the new normal, and they won't return to the old house calls where a doctor in France drives over to your chateau or whatever and does a house call. They will continue with telemedicine, I'm sure. And then there's going to be significant transformations also in web stores and online commerce, especially when it comes to, I think, both edges of the spectrum. These kind of typical groceries and supermarket stuff will get more delivery services than ever before, and more web shopping than ever before. But then also all sorts of specialist trade, whether or not it's exotic parts for your hobby, gear or whatever. That kind of thing is almost getting abolished from mom and pop type of shops and from the street corner, and it's going to move online almost exclusively. So these are the big changes, I think, that are going to settle for good. But then there are so many other things as well, and we might see new funny things emerge, like imagine Tinder and imagine dating after the pandemic now, that you could possibly see a lot of voluntary action in people installing apps that show certificates that they are tested and healthy, and then they get the date because of that. These companies.
Great. Well, thanks, Danny. So we asked for three, and you mentioned education, medicine, and e-commerce, and then we got a fourth one as a bonus, dating. Stefano, how about you? What are you hearing about transformation and the future?
Yeah, I'm not planning to use any dating apps in the future. I'm already covered on that side. But I think that I think that the world is this digitalization that we have been waiting for and talking about for 20 plus years, now in just the span of 2 months has happened very, very quickly. And it kind of shows how, unless human beings are forced to do something, they don't think about the future. They don't change. So that's, I think, shows how difficult it is for us to change our habits. We kept going to the corner store. We kept going and calling our doctor, and we kept sending our kids to school because there was no need to change. And now that the need to change came so suddenly, so quickly, probably we're going to see those things change forever. And I mean, in Italy, which is not the most advanced country in the world, they have managed to deploy this remote education in the span of very few days, thanks to some startups actually as well. But, you know, We didn't feel the need up until a few weeks ago, and nobody did it. And I think that Finland might actually go through the same. And Finland having one of the best school systems in the world, how can it be even better? That's probably with the help of technology. So how does technology fuel all these changes? It's I think interesting, but how much our psychology resists these changes is also interesting as well.
And Nick, what are you hearing?
I'm hearing some great ideas about where to look and where to invest in future. And it's very interesting listening to Tanley and Stefano there. Stefano said something like, it's only when humans are forced to change that they do and they create new habits. And I think that's really interesting. And you know, looking at my two kids this morning on their daily school class conference calls, they're slowly but surely getting really confident and competent using the software, the tools. And I sense that more and more of the kids are getting involved in classroom activities now, whereas a couple of weeks ago in the old world, maybe the quieter kids weren't able to show up as much. So I think it's really interesting. At Tanley's point about the family doctor in France and, you know, web stores and online commerce and medicine, I think this is, it's really interesting stuff.
Final question for Tanley. If you were given 10 million euros right now, which I suspect you might be, but where would you invest in what kind of company that you wouldn't have picked a couple of months ago?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And there's a bunch in the stock market that look interesting right now, that there are all of these new and upcoming challengers in consumer electronics, companies like Xiaomi, the Chinese maker of all sorts of new interesting home appliances, rice cookers and whatnot. Companies like that, all of a sudden, they have an edge because they sell something that people right now feel like they want, and they do it completely in a new way, set apart from the old and conservative companies that surround the marketplace otherwise. So those are interesting. And I would also look at startups differently now with this situation. And one of the areas that I've been thinking is all sorts of coping, mental health, getting your finances together, keeping your headspace clean type of apps. And there are many promising startups out there for that help people with focus, help people with meditation, help with better sleep. These kind of things, they suddenly feel like they are more urgent than they were before, and they have more of an impact. This kind of extended quarantine and pandemic situation is not the ideal circumstances for many people's mental health, and it's these kind of apps and solutions that I feel are something that can quite quickly be a part of remedying and sort of rectifying the situation back to a more sustainable level where people feel better. So all of a sudden, they are very interesting to me right now.
Well, thank you very much, Tanley. So some good tips there, and certainly investing in sustainability and domestic appliances and mental health apps and so forth. I think all of those are certainly going to help us be resilient and get through the crisis to the next stage. So thanks for the conversation today. And thank you for Stefano and Nick for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been great. Do you have a quote for us today, David?
David's quote, he who dares wins.
Yeah. Okay, so here's my quote for the dirt today. It's from the Tao Te Ching, and it is, when I am most destroyed, then I'm about to grow.
Hey, listener, it's Stefano here. Since you got until here, we think that you might like the podcast. It would mean so much if you could leave us a 5-star review and share this with as many of your friends as possible. This will help us be discovered and spread the news. Can you just take 5 minutes and do that for us? Thank you.